I'm Derek Russell.
And I'm Brad Locke, and this is The Memo,
a gathering of all things Northeast Mississippi, brought to you by The Daily Journal and DJournal.com.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome into another episode of The Memo on Wednesday, March 9th, 2016. I'm Brad Locke, along with W. Derek Russell.
How you doing?
Hello, W. Derek Russell.
How Hello, are you? Brad Locke.
Locke.
E.
E. Locke. What? You messed me up.
Here we go again.
That's Chris Kiefer, the producer.
Hello.
He'll chime in occasionally.
It's like rabbit season, duck season. At some point, I'll say rabbit. After saying duck season, I'll say rabbit season. You'll get turned
and
around.
I'll get totally tripped up, just like Elmer Fudd or whoever. Yeah, Elmer Fudd.
Yeah, Elmer's the one hunting, and Bugs and Daffy are the one going rabbit
season.
I'm
Elmer Fudd, right?
Why are you Elmer Fudd?
Because I'm the one that get mixed up. Bugs Bunny mixes him up.
No, Bugs mixes Daffy up. They keep
It's Daffy.
Elmer's
Elmer's
the one hunting one of them, and they're trying to argue over what season.
I've seen that one
is.
Enough times, I should have remembered that.
Need more kids, Brad.
Can we start over? Well, they don't show this stuff. I don't get to watch this stuff anymore.
Yeah, that is a sad realization of today. There's too much Trump and not enough Looney Tunes.
I haven't seen...
Actually, I guess there's Looney Tunes, too.
I haven't seen an old Looney Tunes cartoon in God knows
how
long.
They made new ones starting back at like a year ago. They were actually really, really good, but I don't think they made but like a season, maybe, of it. Cartoon Network had done a new show. They're not as classic as, you know, Bugs dressing up as the lady opera singer.
I just need to go find all those on DVD. They got to be somewhere.
Yeah, they have them.
You think Netflix?
Netflix, I don't think, has Looney Tunes.
They should. I also need to get Animaniacs. I got one of my kids into Animaniacs a couple years ago. She loved it.
Animaniacs is a good one.
Yeah, I know you, at one point you could get that on Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
Those were the days, Derek, when they had actual cartoons on Saturday mornings.
No Looney Tunes on
still these stupid teen sitcoms.
Like what?
I don't know. I don't watch them anymore. I don't know what's on. I still remember at one point that's what all it was, and I assume that hasn't changed.
Yeah, Saved by the Bell.
I actually liked that show.
We were the right age for Saved by the Bell.
We were, yeah.
It was okay. It wasn't like uncool to watch Saved by the Bell.
No, it wasn't. And I guess everybody wanted to be Zach Morris.
I guess by today's standards, I wanted to be Mr. Belden.
Oh, that's another show my kids have been into.
You Mr. Belden?
I was just trying to think of something.
My daughters love Saved by the Bell, by the way.
Do they still watch it?
I haven't lately, but they were really into it. That's one thing my wife and I pride ourselves on. Our kids are into a lot of old TV shows. My daughter Trinity loves Matlock. It's like her favorite guy.
Matlock.
Yeah.
That's way inside.
Watch a lot of The Waltons, Little House on the Prairie.
I hate The Waltons and Little House on the Prairie. No, my sister used to watch those.
They're not necessarily my cup of tea, but they're fine. They're good family programming. You know, it's better than a lot of the junk that's on TV today. Of course, there's plenty of current stuff they like Catching Up with the Kardashians.
No, why?
I don't know. I was thinking this.
There's
like,
no entertainment value there.
Exact thought I had last night. I'm like, seriously, how are you entertained by this at all? Yeah. My kids are smart, okay? My daughters are smart people. I feel like I've instilled some sort of discernment in them when it comes to pop culture, you know.
Apparently not.
There's certain things that they watch that are like, hey, that's a good show, you know, or something I watch. And then this. So I don't know if it's a teenage girl thing.
That's separate ends of the spectrum. My niece has apparently devoured all of Full House, the original.
Oh, yeah, we have too. We love that show.
We
watched the Fuller House.
The Fuller House.
A little edgier, but we liked it. I haven't said that. I saw about the first three episodes, but they went through the whole first season.
Just waiting on Hulu to bring back Perfect Strangers, then I'll be happy.
Balky, was that his name?
Balky, yeah.
Balky, love that show.
I could do some Perfect Strangers again. Well,
that's one of those great shows you just don't really hear about anymore.
Mm-mm.
You know,
well, nobody's trying to cash cow it in by bringing it back and making more episodes.
What's
the guy
doing
like
now? What's Balky doing now?
I don't know.
I don't remember the guy's name.
Like they did with Boy Meets World and.
We watched Girl Meets World. It's okay. The cameos are nice.
X-Files and everything else that they've brought back here lately.
Yeah, it's
Urkel.
Urkel.
Should they bring Urkel back? Family Matters.
I don't think he'd come back and do that again.
I want to say he's moved on from
himself.
That.
Yeah.
Jaleel White. That's his name. Yeah.
Yeah.
Last I saw him was in an episode of Psych a few years ago.
He was on Psych. He was on an episode of House too. We watched House.
Okay.
A good bit.
My wife likes that show. Another show. My wife and mainly my wife and oldest daughter have been into, Grey's Anatomy. They have just been binge watching that.
It's only been on for 13 years.
So that's all we've been watching for like the past 3 months.
You missed the morning meeting this morning. We delved deep into the history of the legacy of Dallas this morning.
Yeah, that's the show I never got into.
All
is the 15. Reboot still on?
No, it got canceled.
Oh, good.
But there was a question of how many seasons, died, didn't it? Right.
I mean, like in real life, the guy died.
Spoiler.
Yes. He actually did die.
He was pretty old.
And then died on the show, too.
Obviously.
And then there was still a mystery around the new show of who killed JR because they had to kill him off on the show.
Really?
He didn't die. Because
I remember
time,
as a kid, who shot JR, and there was some little...
Well, it went on forever. What was interesting, you remember the writer's strike back in like 08, 09, when everything just like, it was a writer's guild went on strike?
Yeah.
So the last time a writer's strike happened was when JR got... shot.
Oh.
And it and was like 83, 84. It was like a 12-month, like it was supposed to only be like a 3-month or 4-month hiatus, and it ended up being like they didn't find out for almost a year who shot JR. It was like that's why it's considered like the biggest cliffhanger.
Huh.
I figured you watched a lot of Magnum PI back in the
day. Oh, you bet I did.
Without your face.
You bet I watched Magnum PI.
Oh, good
time. I haven't seen anything else Tom Selleck has done.
If we talk about made-up things like TV, we don't have to talk about who won
we're supposed to talk politics
yesterday. I don't really want to.
This is my commentary and analysis on the primary Tuesday.
Well, that's very mature of you, professional.
I voted, okay.
Not well, apparently.
I voted. Yeah. But, hey, we actually have some other people who know what they're talking about to talk about this stuff. So we'll have that on the show today. We'll have food, I believe, with Jenna Parsons. And we'll have, Caleb Bedillion coming on the show?
Yeah, talking about ambulance service. Yeah.
And we've got some other stuff. So we got kind of a full show today on this Wednesday. So I guess we should start the show, like, for real.
Well, let's pass it over to our editor, Rod Guajardo, who led the charge last night in our politics talk.
Yes, election coverage, and he's visiting with James Hull and Ed Holliday.
And this is recorded from Tuesday night.
Right.
I'm sitting here with James Hull and Ed Holliday, the Daily Journal's monthly point-counterpoint columnist. James is an award-winning journalist and political consultant. Ed Doc Holliday is a Tupelo dentist who has written two successful books. Together, they debate various issues from different ends of the political spectrum every month in Daily Journal's point-counterpoint column. We're also joined by Bobby Harrison, our Capitol Chief Bureau correspondent down in Jackson. We're going to talk a little presidential primary, a little first district congressional, and just what we're seeing tonight. A quick recap as we looked into the evening, we still had a lot of votes and precincts out there, but we have Hillary Clinton steadily taking Mississippi's Democratic primary seat, Donald Trump cruised to a victory in the GOP primary seat. Trent Kelly was called for the first district congressional seat. So again, no big surprises here, huh, guys?
None at all. And I just think that Donald Trump in Mississippi, as it seems like all across the country, has tapped into this anger vote. Bobby had talked about some exit polls where from Twitter that he found where the anger vote was high. Earlier, the exit poll said that 30% of Mississippi Republicans were quote unquote angry at the government. That must have gone up later in the day when there was that surge of people who had gotten off of work. But, you know, Trump has just tapped into something that we've never actually seen and manifested before. I got to turn it over to my friend Doc because they were the ones that started this, you know, in late 2009, early 2010. And it just seems to be they, you know, Doc, what it seems to me is you guys have just stopped dealing with the congressional races, and you've just decided to go straight to the top and work with this presidential race.
Well, James, you did bring up something that there is anger out there. And, of course, Donald Trump is tapping into it. We see right here in Mississippi how he's just romping, and doesn't seem anybody to be able to stop Donald Trump. And it is interesting. There's so much anger out there, and yet there's no real race in the congressional races. We got four congressional districts in Mississippi, and all the incumbents waltz right into it. So it is an interesting look. I can't give you the answer on that, but it is where Trump and then Cruz is really an anti-establishment vote too. So, and if you add their numbers up tonight, when it's all said and done, I mean, that's way over 80%. I mean, 8 out of 10, that's a higher percentage of people who don't like what they see going on in Washington.
Bobby, any thoughts from Jackson as the night continued on? We were seeing some results come in. Obviously, no big surprises there, but just some thoughts from the capital city.
Well, I mean, I guess they talked a lot about the Republican primary, and I concur on a lot of what they said. But I mean, to me, just you think about now as we talk, the Michigan primary on the Democratic side is very close, but the you know, Clinton is going to win in Mississippi with over 80% of the vote against a a well-funded candidate. Now, granted, he didn't campaign much in Mississippi, but just you just don't see many races where a candidate gets over 80% of the vote, and so that's an impressive showing for Hillary Clinton in Mississippi. You know, I think she and her husband are still very popular in the black community in Mississippi, and they make up a sizable, the black population makes up a sizable size of the Democratic primary vote, and it just shows how strong Hillary Clinton is in the South amongst the minority voters. Now, the problem is that, not the problem, but the challenge for her will be to put those voters together in what, known as the Obama Coalition, which was, progressive whites and minorities and young people to win in November. We'll see if she can do that to counter the anger of the Donald Trump voters.
Yeah, let's talk for a minute about a November Trump-Hillary Clinton ticket. What's that going to mean for Mississippi, specifically James, on the Democratic side?
Well, let's talk about a November Trump-Hillary Clinton Sanders ticket, which I think is highly, highly possible too. Mississippi is not going to elect the president. I mean, in other words, Mississippi, whoever the Republican candidate is, whoever it is going to carry Mississippi. I mean, that's just a given. That's where we are right now. And I think as I was trying to explain, that's why I think Mississippi plays its most important role now in the primary,
sure,
as we continue to count these delegates and just to see what Bernie Sanders is going to do later on this evening and in the two caucuses. But I just don't think that Mississippi is poised in any way to turn blue between now and November, so it's just that's just a given,
right?
And popular votes just don't really care. It's all about electoral votes in, sure, November, and there we are. I'm going to be anxious to see how the whole Republican thing turns out.
Well, speaking of red, we got Doc Holliday here. And Doc, what do you think about a November ticket, or do you have your sights set on the convention first before we can really even get to November?
We were not to November yet. Right. And there's a lot of things. No matter what happens, there's going to be a lot of cringing and gnashing of teeth in the Republican Party. And there's going to be some hand-wringing, and there's going to be sweat. And maybe be blood and tears before it's all over with. But something's going to happen. So if we go to a convention, I really believe in the next few days, if something's not, if some formula is not made to try to get somebody else to stop the front runner, Donald Trump, he looks like he'll be the nominee.
Mm-hmm.
And if he goes there with a lot of delegates and they try to do something to take something away from Trump, I don't see anything but fraction of a Republican Party that could be cracked all the way back to Lincoln when he founded it. So, once we get by the convention, if it's Clinton and Trump, the thing that Donald Trump does, now how much he does it, we don't know. He brags about being able to put New York into play. If he put New York into play, Pennsylvania, Colorado, some of these.
California, he said he could put California in
play. But if he puts California in play, I'll dance on top of some building.
That's Donald Trump. That's what Trump has said, Doc. Right. I mean, hyperbole is his stock in trade.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to start counting these these states like New York, then you may as well start counting California too, don't you think? New York has not elected a Republican president man since
Ronald Reagan.
Exactly. My point exactly.
Just some updates here on the delegate tracker as of early Tuesday evening. You know, again, Republicans need 1,237 delegates to win, and Trump has 384, Cruz had 300, Rubio had 151. And Doc, you and I were talking about this earlier, just what it would look like if Trump doesn't get to the 853 that he has remaining, and we go into a convention, an open convention, and what that could mean for the party.
Well, one of the things it makes everybody's going to want to be a delegate, including me, because that'll be a historic convention. And so who are the delegates? And then there has been fights in the past of trying to get a delegate, and who's going to be the delegates coming out of Mississippi, and every state's going to be the same way. Mm-hmm. Who controls those delegates? And it comes in Mississippi. We have a caucus coming up in April. So there's a lot of ground to cover. Now, one thing somebody said, Donald Trump is winning, but nobody will ever say he is the most organized campaign. He's winning raw votes, and he's doing a great job. I mean, obviously, but his organization skills have not been up there. It's the first time he's run.
Right.
So will that have an effect in a convention? So it's nobody, there's no cigars in the backfield room. This is a day of Facebook, internet, Twitter, and you're talking about a convention that's brokered. I mean, nobody's ever seen it. And I know the news people are just licking their chops, television, print, everybody. I mean, that would be something that, the world has never seen. Mm-hmm. So, good or bad, it would definitely have the ratings high when it comes to a political convention.
What about Donald Trump's policies, Doc? Now, you are a bona fide, you know, when it comes to the Tea Party, when it comes to a constitutionalist. I mean, your credentials are totally intact. I'm just curious to know, how do you feel about much of what Trump has said, kind of the sensational aspect of, you know, like the immigration policies? He changed earlier and said that he wouldn't break the law when it came to torture. He would just broaden the law. He would just expand it, which I take it to mean include torture. Somebody like you, Doc, who is a staunch conservative Tea Party member, constitutionalist, does he concern you about being president?
Well, it concerns me, and that's one reason I'm backing Ted Cruz right now. But, and this is what I've said, I do like the fact that he wants to change, and if he becomes the Republican nominee, there's no doubt he will surround himself with some skilled people. And the Republican Party, I know even now he touches bases with former Mayor Giuliani and some other, you know, Republicans that he's known well, and they sort of form a committee, unofficial committee that says, "Hey, you've gone too far. You've done this." So I know he's already getting some feedback, and I think Trump's having a lot of fun. But he'll say things, and he'll have to come back and walk him back, like he said about when he talked about torture, waterboarding, and I think that what he would do is he'd be surrounded with a lot of people and ready to correct things when he just flies off the cuff. And that's one reason, as a constitutionalist, I want somebody I know where they stand. I know where Ted Cruz stands, and just like Ronald Reagan, people in the liberal side did not like Ronald Reagan's policies, but they knew where he stood, and therefore they could get along. And that's where I see Cruz coming from, and where Donald Trump is more of a, you know, an unknown. And as a conservative, I know he has some moderate positions he's had in the past and liberal positions. So will he remain conservative? The question's out on that.
Bobby, I take it that's why Governor Phil Bryan and maybe Philip Gunn. I don't know. I know Governor Phil Bryant decided to come out at the last minute and support Ted Cruz. Are state leaders, what we call the establishment, are state leaders afraid of Donald Trump? Not afraid of him, obviously, but are just concerned about his politics and his rhetoric. Do you think that may have come into play as why the governor came out at the last minute to support Ted Cruz?
Well, yeah, I do think that. Well, first of all, Cruz fairly fits into, the Speaker Gunn didn't make an endorsement as far as I know, but Governor Bryant did endorse Cruz at the last minute, and he kind of fits into his political philosophy, I think, real well. I think they'd be compatible in a lot of ways. Now, a lot of the establishment is just concerned that, you know, even though Trump's racking up the votes in the Republican primary, that he'd be leading the party toward a, you know, there's two schools of thought. One is that he would bring new voters into the Republican Party in November. The other school of thought is that he would lead Republicans to massive losses. And I've even seen studies or that it could cost the Republicans the Senate in November if he was a nominee. So, I mean, I think you have a lot of unknowns with Donald Trump at the top of your ticket in November. You know, while there's a certain element of people who, you know, it doesn't bother when Donald Trump says John McCain wasn't a war hero. You know, there's a good number of people who are offended by comments like that too. So I think he could cut both ways in November. So I think that's why, you know, a lot of the quote establishment folks are leery of Donald Trump, not just because of the positions he's taken, but just because of a lot of the controversial statements that he's made. So, but we'll
Bobby,
see how that works out.
Bobby said, Doc, here, I have something I want to ask James. What you were talking about Donald Trump is phenomenal. What about Charles Evers, the brother of Medgar Evers, coming out and supporting Donald Trump and endorsing Donald Trump?
Well, you know, Charles Evers, James probably could speak to this better than I did, but he's always walked to his own beat and has kind of been outside of the mainstream of his community. Right to that, Megar Evers would have made it clear that she was for Hillary Clinton, and she has. So I mean, it was not that much of a surprise for Evers to do that.
Oh yeah, Bobby, and I just want to add parenthetically, you and I haven't hit a tennis ball together in almost 35 years, but you are still my soulmate, brother, because I mean, Charlie Evers has always done this kind of wild card stuff. He always has. I wasn't surprised when I read it two or three days ago. My daughters called me up in a tizzy, Daddy, what is he doing? And, you know, but I have some institutional knowledge about Charlie Evers. Charlie Evers, you know, effectively elected Thad Cochran, so you know he's been doing this all of he elected Thad Cochran by being an independent in the race and taking away
a lot
of black votes.
78. That's right.
That's exactly right. So yeah. You know he's always done that. I saw him about 3 or 4 days ago when I was in his radio station and I shook his hand and kept it moving because he's just a strange character, and he's always been an avowed Republican too. I think Charlie still thinks that we're in the party of Lincoln, or he's just decided he wanted to be a wild card from the black community. But I don't know.
James, I predict that, especially if it's Trump is the nominee, I predict that the current incumbent president will be probably about as active in campaigning, almost as active as he was 4 years ago.
You're probably right, considering that diss he gave Mr. Trump at the congressional writers' dinner, the correspondents' dinner. I guess that was about 4 or 5 years ago, with Trump sitting in the room. Mm-hmm. That was hilarious.
Well, I want to thank James Hull and Doc Holliday and Bobby Harrison for being on the show today. Gentlemen, thank you for offering your political insight, and we always appreciate you having you on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Enjoy it.
For more analysis of last night's election, go to djournal.com. You can watch the replay of Tuesday's webcast featuring Rod, James, Ed, and Bobby, who you just heard. Speaking of James Hull and Ed Holliday, you can look for more from them in the Daily Journal's monthly Point Counterpoint column. James is an award-winning journalist and political consultant. Ed is a Tupelo dentist who's written two successful books, and together they debate various issues from different ends of the political spectrum. And speaking of Bobby Harrison, be sure to watch the Daily Journal's Capitol View webcast each Monday at djournal.com. Bobby will provide commentary and analysis on the issues being debated by Mississippi lawmakers. You can watch live each Monday afternoon around 2 o'clock, or if you miss it, catch the replay later in the day. New episodes will be released as long as the legislature is in session. We welcome in now Caleb Bedillion, local government reporter for the Journal. Caleb, welcome back, buddy.
Thank you, Brad. Glad to be here again.
You got a story. You had a story Tuesday.
It was in Tuesday's paper.
It was a Monday meeting is what it was.
That's right.
I'm on top of my game today, guys. Representatives of the North Mississippi Medical Center appearing before the Lee County Board of Supervisors. They're discussing something that we've covered before, ambulance service.
Yes,
to the far,
right.
In particular to the far-flung reaches of Lee County, which it can be a problem because it can take an ambulance, you know, 10, 12 minutes easy to get to places, you know, on the, like I said, to the outer areas, rural areas of the county. So kind of what was the meeting about there in particular?
All right, you said it, Brad. This is particularly something that District 1 Supervisor Phil Morgan has been concerned about, and that is timely ambulance response to northern and southern extremities of the county. So we're talking, you know, Baldwin, Guntown on one end, Shannon on the other end. And it's not so much necessarily just the city limits of those areas that Mr. Morgan is concerned about, but kind of the rural areas that surround
right.
those incorporated towns.
Yeah, I mean, you get some numbers in here about the response time statistics. Average response time in Tupelo is about 8 minutes, Baldwin 11 minutes, Shannon in that area 12 to 13 minutes. Which seems, you know, it's pretty quick, but for somebody who's been in a bad wreck, it's like, it's, you know, every minute just, I'm sure it feels like, I mean, I've been in a bad wreck a few years ago, for those who don't know, and I thought they got there in a reasonable amount of time. I think I was down near, it happened between here and West Point. I can't remember if it was in Chickasaw County or Monroe County, but it was right by that gas station / barbecue joint. About halfway between here and West Point. So I got but still it took them probably 10 to 15 minutes just to get there. I don't know where it was dispatched from because it wasn't in Lee County. But what I'm saying is, you know, it's a couple of minutes can make a huge difference in
sure,
a situation like
sure.
this.
Sure, that's something that Mr. Morgan has said, you know, when you're dealing with a stroke or a heart attack, minutes and even seconds can count. Now, those numbers that you just shared were provided by North Mississippi Medical Center
right.
to supervisors during their meeting on Monday. And those numbers, I believe, are for the city limits of those incorporated areas.
Right.
So that's where, you know, Mr. Morgan is saying, you know, yeah, those numbers are pretty good, but you start getting 10 or 15 minutes further, you know,
right.
east or west of Baldwin, kind of a rural area that maybe the ambulance may not be familiar with, and Mr. Morgan's pointed out sometimes GPS in that those areas
yeah.
is not always accurate.
And you're not on four lane in a lot of those areas.
That's right. That's right. So that's why Mr. Morgan's main goal is to get a permanent substation in probably Guntown on the north and Shannon on the south.
Right.
So you would have an ambulance there at all times. Right now, the way it works, at all times, the hospital tells me they have a minimum of seven ambulances that can respond
right.
24/7. During what they past records show to be peak times, they have as many as 10 ambulances that can respond
right.
to calls. Now, most of those will be stationed at various places in Tupelo. They have an ambulance that they call it posting, so it basically sits and idles in Guntown, and
yeah.
that happened in November. Previously, it had been out closer, more in the Saltillo area, but hospital said moving that truck to Guntown to
yeah.
sit and wait for calls did improve response time
so basically they're
by
just,
a little bit.
This ambulance is just sitting in the parking lot in Guntown waiting for a call.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Which, you know, if nothing happens may seem like kind of a waste, but if you do have one of these serious incidents that we're talking about in Baldwin or somewhere in a rural unincorporated area, that ambulance is that much closer.
Yeah.
to that scene. So the main goal here, the hospital says, if the county can provide some kind of facility in Guntown
sure.
where the ambulance can be, that would be of help. That way that truck's not just idling all day. The crew would have a place the ambulance could stay. they'd have a break room, place they could get coffee, go to the bathroom or something.
Right.
And then Shannon as well. Maybe possibility of getting a truck out there, station, some kind of substation.
So supervisors, they seem pretty receptive to this idea.
Oh, yeah. The
all of them.
Phil Morgan, his goal from the beginning has been to have a substation in Guntown and one in Shannon. And he has really emphasized that what supervisors want to do is cooperate with the medical center.
Sure.
He's not trying to be oppositional or confrontational and accuse the hospital of not providing an adequate service. He realizes they have limited, you know, finite resources. They can't have – sure, I mean, I'm sure they'd have, love to have 20 ambulances that can respond at all times, but we all have limitations.
Sure.
So Morgan's goal has been to see how the county can help the hospital provide a better service.
All right. Y'all can read that story again in Tuesday's Journal or at djournal.com. Follow Caleb on Twitter at Caleb Bedillion. Bedillion just spells just like it sounds. Hey, need to remind y'all about the two sports podcasts we have here at the Daily Journal and djournal.com. You can check out the new episode of Prep Rally this afternoon, the high school sports podcast with myself and Gene Phelps. State basketball tournament going on in Jackson right now, right in the middle of it. A lot of semifinal games have been played, still have a few left, and then the finals begin later this week. So we'll be discussing that. Gene is in Jackson, and you can listen on iTunes, your podcast app, or preprally.djournal.com. And then tomorrow, Thursday, have a new episode of Double Coverage, Ole Miss and Mississippi State Sports Talk with Paris Alford and Logan Lowry. The Rebels already into spring practice, and I believe MSU is going to start soon. So probably have a little football to talk about, as well as some hoopage and baseball. You can listen on iTunes, your podcast app, or doublecoverage.djournal.com. Podgator going to come over here and do the news memo with me?
Hoopage.
A little hoopage.
I just felt like going hoopage.
Podgator, what we got today on the news memo? Okay. Time for the news memo. For more on these stories, you can read the Daily Journal or visit djournal.com or just ask Podgator what's going on. Tupelo native and mother of two, Stacy Blaylock, was named the Tupelo Public School District's 2016 Parent of the Year. Blaylock and her husband, Stephen, have a daughter who is in the first grade at Parkway Elementary School. They also have another daughter who will start kindergarten next year. Blaylock has worked to support Parkway's teachers, including providing classroom supplies. She also has implemented numerous fundraising events at Parkway and brought the school's students cultural and educational experiences.
State agency budgets would have to be cut to offset any tax cuts or tax credits under a provision passed Tuesday by the House Appropriations Committee. Appropriations Chairman Herb Frierson said the provision is to keep everybody honest. He said he does not anticipate any tax cuts. Frierson warned that the legislature would face tough budget decisions because state revenue collections continue to be sluggish.
Joe Babb was elected president of the Tupelo School Board on Tuesday. Babb said he looks forward to working with the rest of the board and with Superintendent Gerald Loden to build on the accomplishments of the district. He has served on the school board since 2013. Also, board member Rob Hudson was sworn in for a new 5-year term. Hudson was recommended for reappointment by Mayor Jason Shelton and approved by the City Council in December.
USB ports are among the features of new seating recently installed at the food court at the mall at Barnes Crossing. The smartphone charging ports were installed on the outside walls of 3 new circular seating areas. The feature is one of several new amenities and changes at the mall, which got new majority ownership in 2014. The flooring has been replaced in the 800,000-square-foot shopping center to go along with the new lighting and paint.
Legislation designed to limit Attorney General Jim Hood's ability to file civil lawsuits died Monday in the Mississippi House. The bill would have required the Attorney General to obtain a majority vote of an oversight commission before suing any entity for more than $250,000. The commission would have included the governor, lieutenant governor, and secretary of state. Hood is the only statewide elected Democrat.
All right, Jenna Parsons joining us now. It is Wednesday, and we look forward to her gracing us with her presence in the studio. Everybody, that's not what is that side eye? That's that I'm being.
I don't know about gracing. I'm here.
You are the queen of grace. As far as the newsroom's concerned,
our
I can
daughter's name
that.
Middle name is Grace.
Well, it runs in the family. Then it must.
You're so sweet.
I'm just being honest. Also, well, no, you didn't bring any food with you. I'm not going to be that nice,
no,
I guess.
No, let me tell you. I was going to make these cookies that Leslie Chris had asked for that I saw on the cover of Mississippi Magazine. Uh-huh. So without her knowing, I went yesterday and I bought all the stuff that I needed. They're really pretty decorative cookies. and got home last night and took the butter out so it would be room temperature. And I got up at 5 this morning to make these cookies. Mm-hmm. Read through the recipe for the first time, which is a major mistake. You should always read through it before you get ready, but I didn't. And it said that I had to make the dough and I had to chill it for more than an hour. So the cookies did not get made this morning, and I was going to bring some for y'all.
You go home and think about what tomorrow. You've done.
We would have allowed you to be, it would have been okay if you'd been missed the meeting and been late just for that.
Well, I took a walk instead. I walked a couple of miles and thought about what I had done, Derek.
You walked instead of making cookies? That's not healthy.
Not American.
I'm going to make them tonight.
It's very un-American. Well, your column today is about turkey burgers, which I detest, but I know are much healthier. And
have you ever had a turkey burger?
I've had several turkey burgers. I just can't do it.
No, I don't mean... I know you like Danvers.
Yeah, I've had theirs,
okay,
too.
Okay, that's not the same thing.
Yeah, I've had others, and I've made my own. I just don't... It's not... I just don't...
Well, if you would just...
Lacks. Turkey is good, no matter
what. If you would... But these were... The apple made it sweet, and the jalapeno made it a little bit spicy, and the garlic and the ginger gave it sort of a... Oh, they were delicious, and they were so juicy, and I wish I had one right now.
Well, why don't you make one for me, and then we'll see.
And I will do it.
Okay. Well, then maybe that'll win me over.
Okay.
But then from there on out, you're going to have to make them for me so that I'll eat them.
I want one, too.
No, you're out on this. Shave that thing, and then we'll talk. And then we'll talk about your food.
Boys.
Well, so... When did you make these? Like one day last week, or
gosh, when did we make them? It was over the weekend, I think, because I brought one left over. I think we made them Sunday. I brought one left over for lunch, and I didn't do the bun with it because I'm trying to cut back on breads and rice and pasta and eat more vegetables and whatnot.
Well, you just bring me your bread when you don't want it. I'll eat that for you.
And I'll eat the turkey burger and you eat the bun.
I'm fine with that. That's the only time I've known the Bible to be wrong, because I could live on bread alone.
I'd have to have some cheese, too, a little wine.
I just need the bread. Your cook of the week this week was Carrie Ruth from Fulton. What did she create for you?
She made a cake. It's a white cake, but the icing is what she gave us the recipe for. It's her grandmother's recipe. And so the icing makes enough to ice any three-layer cake. If you wanted to do a white cake or a chocolate cake or a strawberry cake, I guess, for that matter. But she did a white cake. And this is a recipe that wherever she takes it, she comes home with the clean plate. People just love it. And she also made a dish called upside down pizza, and she raised three girls, and when they were little, this was their favorite meal, and they would beg her to make it. And when her daughter nominated her, and when her daughter mentioned to me the upside down pizza, and then I mentioned to her that her daughter had mentioned it, she was so embarrassed, and she said, it is the absolute easiest thing in the world to make, but her kids love it. But you brown ground beef with some onion, and then you put it into a casserole and you top it with spaghetti sauce and cheese, and then you put biscuits on top of it.
You have
and
my
so
attention.
Everything is just upside down. So you've got the crust is on the top, and then you've got
just a casserole,
cheese
basically.
And tomato sauce and the
I made
meat
an upside
on top.
Down pizza once several years ago. I
you dropped it.
Accidentally grabbed the hot pizza stone and pizza flipped right onto the floor upside down.
Still ate it, didn't you?
I don't think I did.
Still ate it.
I don't think
spoiler alert to the end of that story. You ate it off the floor, didn't you? Your other story, your centerpiece for this week, was the Butchers, Farmers, and Chefs Expo, which is coming up this Saturday, I believe.
It is this Saturday, yeah. Mitch McCamey has scored a coup by getting two James Beard award-winning chefs here, John Currents from Oxford and Chris Hastings from Birmingham. And as Mitch said, you know, he's got a neon pig in Oxford now.
Yeah.
And he said it would have been so easy just to do this whole thing there, because one of the chefs is already there. They've already got a restaurant there. But he really wants to put the spotlight on Tupelo and get people to Tupelo and get them coming here to eat, not just coming for a concert or a soccer tournament, but furniture market, but getting them here because we have a good restaurant scene. And we do have a good restaurant scene. The local people downtown and then South, and that's out on Gloucester. So, and then course, the Neon Pig.
They've got more space now to allow for something like this.
Yes, they just expanded. They knocked the wall out at Tutti Frutti, and they have rented that space. So they've added 30 seats. They can add a few more, but it just, I don't know if you ever went into Neon Pig, but, you know, you did have to pretty much crawl over people and to get to the meat counter or to the beverage cooler.
Excited about that. My daughter, we frequented Mist, and whenever we would leave Mist, we'd go to Tutti Frutti. So my daughter is heartbroken.
Well, I know why they shut. I don't know why they shut down. I'm just guessing because it costs too dang much to eat there. We spent $30 on whatever the.
God, you sound so old. Why don't you tell people to get off your lawn while you're at it?
To my family there one time, just you know, to get whatever, was it ice cream? Was it yogurt?
If you fill it up a whole lot, they weigh it. You don't have to get that much.
Yeah, we spent $30 easy.
Well, but there are like 18 of you, aren't there?
Yeah, I was gonna say Waltons. If you hadn't had so many kids,
we went to Dairy Cream yesterday, and it cost like $10. Okay,
oh,
come on.
Dairy Cream! I love me some Dairy Cream.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we used to take our children and taught them the value of a dollar there. Yes. Where do you get frozen yogurt now?
Well, Tutti Frutti is still in the mall.
Oh, is there one in the mall?
Yeah, part of the problem, I think, is they opened three. Because there was the one in front of Walmart, there was this one, at Neon Pig, and then there was the one at the food court.
Oh,
so
wow. I didn't realize
they've
that.
They've backed down to. There's also one next to Mount Fuji. It's not Tutti Frutti, but it is another frozen yogurt place over there by Nukes.
Right.
I can remember when TCBY was over here on Rankin Extended.
Oh, my gosh. I had forgotten about that.
And their peach yogurt. I'm so hungry. Jenna, thanks for joining us. I'm going to go eat now.
Show's over. Got to go eat.
Goodbye, everybody. Jenna, but really, thank you for joining us. That event, of course, details about that by calling Neon Pig at 269-2533. You're finding them on Facebook?
Yes.
The dinner's already sold out. Yeah, I was going to say, KOK is already sold out.
The dinner is sold out, but lunch is first come, first serve.
All right. Well, great news in the food section today, Jenna. Thanks for joining us.
And so welcome Emma Kent back into the show. Got her coffee there with her, piping hot.
Mm-hmm.
Had to take the lid off for you.
Yep.
Appreciate that because it like makes me feel manly when I have to do stuff like that.
You're welcome,
Open
Brad.
Open a jar of pickles at home or that thermos. That's a good-looking thermos.
But it's a Stanley.
Looks like one of those thermoses keep your coffee hot for like a week.
Yesterday, it kept my coffee hot from about 9:30 to 2 in the afternoon.
Wow. And it still tastes good.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, okay, I guess we should talk about these stories you wrote. Tupelo High has a new band director.
They do.
How about that? They announced it last night. Rick Murphy comes from Tennessee. Spent a lot of time up there, including at Middle Tennessee State.
Mm-hmm.
How about that? So this guy's got a rich background in music, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's got over 30 years of experience with bands, you know, high school and college. So he's got a lot of knowledge about band stuff. So,
but he's also kind of familiar with the area. He's been living around here recently and been working with he was working at North Pontotoc and helping out over there.
Yeah, he's been over there for 3 years maybe.
Yeah, he's assistant band director at North Pontotoc for the past 3 years. Yeah.
So he's familiar with the area, and he says he likes it here, and he's excited to be in, you know, come into Tupelo. So.
And you know, I mean, Tupelo High, as far as I can tell, has a really good band. I'm a former band geek, so I feel like I'm a pretty good judge of that. You know, it's a big school. Typically, those big schools, you got a pretty large band. You're supposed to be good. I know. I'm just saying, I was in a pretty decent sized band in high school. And anyway, so you're expected to be good at that level. He's got 5 state championships that he won in Tennessee, most recently in 2004. So he'll step into the role July 1st. So we know he's got a good background, but you've talked to the guy. So what did you gather from him?
I mean, he seems like a guy that I think the kids will enjoy working with, and that the other band directors hopefully will enjoy working with. He seemed like he's got a good personality, and he seemed energetic and excited and very passionate about band and excited about working with the students. And I think that's the most important thing. One thing that he did tell me that I didn't get to include in the story, and he asked me to, but I didn't feel like I had enough space to do it, was that he really likes tennis.
Really?
Yeah, he made a point to tell me that he is a very avid tennis player, mm-hmm. and he's actually going to England this summer to Wimbledon. Really? Not to play, but to watch.
Still.
So
it's impressive just to be able to go there.
Yeah. So if anybody's looking for somebody, a new tennis partner.
There you go.
Rick Murphy's in town.
Rick Murphy. he replaces, as we know, Tim Matlock, who got himself in a spot of trouble there after an arrest. Okay, Emma, y'all can read her story in today's journal on that. And also we want to talk about teachers in space. Teachers in space, Emma. Almost in space.
Not quite so in close. Space, but they're closer than you and I will ever go.
So we got a couple of area educators that are actually going to participate in this really cool thing with NASA. It's called the Airborne Astronomy Ambassadors Program, a professional development opportunity for educators. Only a select few get to participate in this. We've got a Guntown Middle School teacher, Connie Gusmus, and Robert Swanson, the ICC astronomy instructor. So they're going to go in this huge Boeing 747. They're going to get really close to space, Emma. How close?
Like, really close, Brad.
Like, you know, if they were staying on top of the plane and reached up, they could touch space. Yeah, that close.
I mean, I would assume. I've never been up that far.
I wouldn't advise standing on top of a plane.
I think if you have long arms, you could reach it.
Okay.
But they're going to be above 99% of the water vapor in the atmosphere.
So we have to like wear earplugs.
So that's pretty far up.
yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess
that far up. Do you have to have like oxygen and stuff? I mean.
I mean, they're in a pressurized.
Well, yeah, but I mean, cabin, like, I don't know, right? If you need any extra equipment.
As far as I know,
things start getting a little floaty. But you're good.
Well, if we start losing gravity, then maybe you've gone too high.
Yeah, and I don't think they're going to be like zero gravity conditions, but they'll be pretty close to space.
But it'll be different from your typical plane flight, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not going to be the same. So what's kind of the purpose of this this program? What are they hoping to take from it?
They'll go up to study. So in their astronomy class at ICC, and then also these middle schoolers, they study different types of waves that enter the Earth's atmosphere. And so, you know, that's like UV and radio waves, and then like light, all the different kind of waves. So they're studying infrared waves, which most observatories on the ground can't pick up because the water vapor in the atmosphere blocks them from coming in. And so since they're going to be above so much of that high up, they can really see them, or they can really see the waves using infrared technology and really study kind of how they, the ones that are entering, and study how they interact with the atmosphere and that kind of thing. So they're going to, I mean, that's a big part of their curriculum. And so they're going to be able to bring that experience back and kind of have more of an understanding and be able to just share that with their students, which is pretty neat.
Yeah, and they're completing an astronomy course that gives them graduate credit. Mm-hmm. So they get to work with professional astronomers. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, they'll get to fly out to California and work with some astronomers, and they'll fly up twice. Maybe more depending on the weather, but I think right now they're saying at least twice they'll go up. And it's actually kind of interesting. They fly up at night, and then they spend about 10 hours up there. And it's an overnight kind of mission, I guess, or flight. And so they would spend 10 hours up there studying and doing their work. And, you know,
it's crazy.
And then they would come back down and then sleep probably for the next day.
It would be like 40,000 feet or more above the Earth's surface.
Yeah. So
that's crazy.
We'd be pretty high up.
Teachers in Space. Sounds like a movie.
I don't know if it sounds like a good movie, though.
Yeah, probably not. Teachers in Almost Space sounds like an even worse movie. But I don't know. All right, Emma, again, you can find this story in today's journal, djournal.com. Thank you so much, Emma, for putting up with me and telling us all this cool stuff.
Cool. Thanks, Brad.
Enjoy your coffee.
Oh, I will.
Need to remind y'all about Thrive Marketing, a full-service digital marketing company located in Tupelo, providing websites, search engine optimization, social media management, email, and text messaging services for local businesses online at thrive.ms. That's the show, everybody. We're done, Derek, mercifully.
Put you out of your misery, Brad.
As I was saying between segments, after Chris edits all this, it can be gold.
Yes, but all the unedited stuff is what they really want to hear.
Well, we'll have an outtakes episode at some point, right?
No pressure whatsoever. Hey, we'll be back.
I just know Chris has these outtakes stored somewhere. He's just waiting for the right time.
It's called blackmail, Brad, and we'll be using it on you one day very soon.
Great.
Thursday, new episode.
Yes.
Hopefully Brad will be a little bit more caffeinated, a little bit more awake.
I only have one cup of coffee. I don't know. I've been off all day.
I think it's that mustache. It's sucking the life source right out of you.
Nah, I don't think so.
That's probably not. Is it going to be gone after...
After the play, yes.
Oh, yeah, the play. I forgot.
Which is the week of April 7th.
April 7th, yeah.
Sorry. Not sorry. Follow us on Twitter at DJournalMemo. Drop us an email, memo@journalinc.com. Follow me on, I hope you're writing all this down. Follow me on Twitter at Brad Locke.
They could just hit the rewind button.
And you can do that. That's what's great about a podcast. Can't rewind the radio, can you?
Can't. That was difficult for you to get out when you can't rewind the
radio. Say that five times fast.
Can't rewind the radio, rewind the radio, rewind the radio, rewind the radio, rewind the radio.
The fifth one's tricky.
I messed it up.
Yeah, do that.
Almost.
You're on the Twitter.
I am. But it's more important to tell you that you can read about these stories that you mangled today in your daily journal or online at djournal.com.
Yeah, you can.
And then I'm also on the Twitter at W. Derek Russell.
At W. Derek Russell. Chris Kiefer, at Chris Kiefer.
At Chris Kiefer.
Chris is like, I want nothing to do with this. Leave me out of it.
We don't know which F is silent anymore. We forget, so whatever.
The H is silent too, I guess, right?
Yeah,
the
probably who? So.
The Z?
H. Chris.
H. Oh, okay. Riz. I don't think it is. Okay. We're
done. Brad's definitely done. He may not be here tomorrow or ever again after this one.
Join us again tomorrow, please. Everybody, I beg you.
Please join Brad again tomorrow. Don't let that have kept you away today. Thanks. We'll see you guys next time.